This is the iPhone LA Podcast, episode 17, recorded live on the show floor of New Media Expo on August 15th, 2008.
Okay, welcome to the Orange County Podcasters and iProng Magazine booth here at New Media Expo in Las Vegas, Nevada. And right now we've got our iPod and iPhone, or should we say iPhone and iPod experts panel. We'll talk about that a little later, about which name should be going first at this point. We wanted to really do this one up right, so we've gone and gotten, when I call us the experts panel, I mean it. These are the biggest authorities, the best authorities in the in whole Apple iPod iPhone realm. I'm going to let them introduce themselves, and I'm going to throw a surprise question at each of them just to mess with their heads. But who wants to start? John, do you want to start?
Sure. I'm John. No, I'm Victor, and I'm from typicalmacuser.com. Thank you for having me.
So I didn't know you were coming, Victor. Did you just slip in under the radar?
I did. We were going to go to Yosemite, but it caught on fire, and, you know, Vegas is always the good second choice. So there you go.
How about that? He's here because his first destination was on fire.
That would be correct, actually.
Well, we're glad you're here again. You were on a panel last year, and it rocked, right?
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. I'm Dave Hamilton from Backbeat Media, the Mac Observer, and the Mac Geek Gab podcast. Thanks for having me.
Where's your mustache?
We were going to have you twirl your mustache.
Would that be an African or a European mustache?
I don't remember why, but we were hoping you would come and twirl your mustache.
Yeah.
I don't.
When we were talking about the iPhone.
What's this? Oh, that's right. I need to twirl my mustache. That's right. All right. Well, we'll do it virtually here. Yeah.
I'm Michael Johnston. I'm from iPhone Alley and the iPhone Alley podcast.
Now, Michael, this time last year, you weren't podcasting. So what led you to join this crazy nonsense with us in the past year?
Well, I've always thought that podcasting sounded like a lot of fun. I just never had anything, you know, to talk about until, you know, having my website. I figured it would be a good extension of that.
Cool. I'm Adam Christensen, and I'm from a show called The MacCast. So...
What time did you wake up this morning and where?
I woke up in beautiful San Diego, California, where it was nice and pleasant about 4 a.m. and then arrived here. And I think it was 7:30 or so, and I believe it was 87 degrees. So
woke up at 4 a.m. and got on a plane from California just for this panel. So how about that?
He woke up at 4 a.m. and called it pleasant.
I wasn't asleep at 4 a.m.
Exactly. I think everybody was still up when I was just bored and just waking up.
Am I on?
Is your mic working?
Is it not working?
Is this thing on? Classic Las Vegas line. Hello,
you got to eat the mic. You got to.
Really?
Yeah, okay.
Hi.
Eat the phone.
Ken Ray from macOS Ken. Hi.
You rock.
How does Ken sound?
I have nothing to ask you, Ken.
I'm glad you're not asking, man. What time I woke up and where.
No, I already used that one up on the bingo card.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
You've had some interesting changes going on. You know,
I have.
I don't know whether I should get into our personal lives already, but I'm excited about what you got going on.
Thank you.
We're not.
No comments.
It's like, I got nothing.
Listen to macOS Ken for more later.
Yeah. That would be good. Yeah. No, I moved. Yeah, right. I moved across the country.
Oh, is that all? No, I was talking about the other thing.
I'm going to try the whole full-time podcaster thing, so we'll see how it goes. That's the plan.
Who the hell put me in charge?
Ken Ray is my hero.
Ken Ray, you know, we were picking on Ken yesterday. I was saying how I listen to his show every day on the way to lunch, and then Jason Tucker was saying he listens to it first thing in the morning, and I think you thought we were groupies or something. Will you
I'm
come
okay
over here
with
and
that.
Sign my chest?
I'm fine with that. Yes, I will.
Okay, before everybody just stones me or goes home, we should move on to the
At 4 a.m., Bill was outside Ken's hotel room just waiting for him to come out.
But why, Ken?
What? I missed the last thing. I'm sorry.
I'll just stop talking now. So this time last year, we were talking about the this brand new product that had been announced. Oh, I don't know, about I lost my voice already. About 9 months earlier, but they just released it a couple months earlier. This newfangled thing called the iPhone. Everybody went and bought one, millions and millions. But a lot of people said, "I'm going to wait for the second one because I know how this works. I'll get the second iPhone." And it just came out, and it's all the rumors are right. It's got 3G, it's got GPS, it's got LMNOP, and all these other things. So, in a nutshell, if somebody, you know, they hear iPhone 3G, they don't really know what the new iPhone is all about. What exactly is new about the iPhone that people need to know about as far as this new model?
They need to wait.
What's that?
They need to wait. I think they need to wait, honestly. I mean, if you want to talk about the cool parts about it, it's got the GPS, like you said, that's good. It's lighter. It's got a different form factor. So if you're the kind of person who feels really good about having the newest thing, then you can show that off. But software is buggy, and it just it's like I feel power slipping into my pocket right now out of my iPhone. It's lovely. It really is, but it's a weird thing because they actually got it right on the first one. And then there seems to be more problem, I think, with the second.
And see, I don't think those problems are necessarily. There are some hardware issues with the new one, but I think we're talking more software issues with the new one, which of course extend. Those issues are backwards compatible with the first gen, which is great. You know, it's really nice to have
we
bugs
all suck together.
That you can. That's right. Suck in harmony.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you go. I mean, I didn't mean they should wait. If they don't have an iPhone, they should wait, I think, a few months until the software issues get worked out. It's still a totally sweet phone. But
well, you know, I was the one guy on the panel last year, I think, right, that did not have an iPhone. I was the one dissenter. I had a Trio. I was second year of the Trio, and then just rounded the corner on my third and went and got the new 3G iPhone. And compared to the Trio, and I resisted this for a long time. It's a much better device for most things. The keyboard is actually better than typing on a Trio. For somebody that used a Trio for 3 years, I got very fast on it. It is the right thing. So I don't know that I would recommend that people necessarily wait. It depends on what you need the phone for. For me, I found living with the Trio every day, there were a lot of things. It did everything that it did the day I got it. But there were a lot of things that I couldn't do that everyone else was able to do that I wanted to or even in some cases needed to do. And so moving to the iPhone allowed me to do that, like browsing the web. When I got my Trio, browsing the web on the Trio was the expected experience on a mobile device. The iPhone changed that definition and therefore made it so that I needed to go get one of these things. So
I think, Dave, like for me, I think one thing might be that the first gen iPhone was something that people would break their contract for. You know, I searched for months to figure out ways to get out of my contract without ETF fees. I think maybe on this one, maybe the answer is you don't have to rush to break your contract because it's going to get better. It's had some early issues early out of the gate, and it's only going to get better. But if you're due for a new phone and you want the iPhone, I mean, this is going to be it for a while. And as you're pointing out, it's probably mostly software stuff. The battery, I don't know. I don't know how they're going to get the battery better. I think that you talk to anybody who has any smartphone with a GPS and 3G, and they'll tell you the battery life sucks. And Apple's is at least in the ballgame, and from what I understand, maybe even a little bit better than a lot of other devices.
Yeah, and you know, if you lower your brightness down and turn off the auto brightness thing and kill Bluetooth and kill Wi-Fi and kill GPS and essentially, you know, neuter the thing, you know, the battery might even last all day. It's pretty good. So
especially if you just leave it turned off all day.
Well, that's what I mean.
I mean, completely off.
Completely, right, just, black screen. Just, well, it's, you know, and the first one had this too, but people didn't talk about it. It has the mirror app.
I mean, boot it down and don't ever turn it on.
Right, you turn on the mirror app where you got that black screen on the front. If you leave the mirror app running, then you're totally good to go.
Here's the thing, though. I mean, since when did we start saying, well, this Apple product kind of sucks, but it's not as bad as the competition? I mean, how many of you have the new iPhone? Me and Adam don't, right? I didn't do it because I kind of chickened out on the first day. I'm like, I'm going to make sure I got an external battery option because the original cradle I had didn't work. It took me about a week to find a new battery option. By that time, I'd been using 2.0, my old one, and I got to the point where holy crap, is this. I love my iPhone for the first year. There are things it couldn't do. Now I hate my iPhone, and that's not good because, you know, like there's the word iPhone in the name of my publication. And that's not cool because I hate my iPhone. I was going to throw it in traffic the other day walking down Hollywood Boulevard.
You hate it? Specifically, why?
I hate it because everything that used to work doesn't. I'm listening to music and I go on the Maps application and the music starts skipping. 6.5 years, 20 iPods and an iPhone, nothing's ever skipped. And my thing is, if the iPhone 1.0 ran like this, I'd be like, all right, it's 1.0, it'll get better. It didn't get better. It's gotten monumentally worse, and I just can't think of a time where Apple put an update. Yeah, we've talked about this, where there are updates like Leopard comes out for the Mac, and a small number of users have a crash and a catastrophic result. But 2.0 seems like it sucks for the majority of users. I'm about ready to downgrade. I probably am when I'm going home, and that's, I don't know, I'm going to be cut off from the new people, but I need my phone to work, and so I'm kind of torn, really.
Well, you could downgrade and jailbreak it and kind of have the best of middle ground there.
If I have to jailbreak my iPhone, I'm getting rid of it and getting something else. If I ever have to go to that point where I have to mutilate an Apple product to make it work, I'm done. I don't think I'm there, but because 1.14 worked, right? Yeah. It's worked. And the apps, they're nice, but they crash too. So why have them? And I'm talking temporary. When 2.1 comes out in a month, I'll go back. But I don't know. I'm almost tempted to say to everybody, just downgrade. If you're having a problem, just downgrade for now. And I don't know if I'm out of line saying that to people because it's kind of a radical thing to say. It's like saying, get rid of OS X and go back to 9 or something, which I never would have said.
Although plenty of people did, right, when OS X came out. People jumped to it and then went back for a while. And then, you know, 10.1 came around, and really 10.2, and then they went to it. So that's not necessarily bad advice. Of course, it doesn't work for anybody with the 3G iPhone. But
right.
Yeah.
Right. I'm basically saying don't buy. If I say that, I'm saying don't buy a 3G iPhone if you have the original. And it also worries me because if I say that, then a lot of people are going to hear that. Oh, he's saying don't jump from a Razr or a BlackBerry to a new iPhone. Which my thing is, no. Buy, if you don't already have an iPhone, buy one because you're going to go buy something else and get locked out of a contract for 2 years and they'll never come back to the iPhone.
So Bill, is this a problem of our microscope is so honed in, we're so focused in? I mean, 3 million people can't be wrong. This hasn't been a major news story. No, I don't think they can.
Every time I see
them out there in the casinos using their iPhones, they're happy as pie. The young ladies are walking around making appointments. It's working for them. And what I'm saying is, our microscope is so focused in on the micro that I think that we're missing the big picture, my opinion.
It's a great device. I mean, it seriously is. You've got more computing power in your pocket than anyone ever expected, I think, that we would. That's great. The problem is, as we come to rely on it more, we want it to be more... It's not... The phrase that Jobs uses is not, it just works usually. What he says is, it just works. Yesterday, I talked to my girlfriend at about 9 o'clock last night. She said, did you get that email? I said, what email? I went and checked my phone. It had been checking for email since 1:42 in the afternoon. That's where all my battery power went, and I hadn't gotten any email from anybody. I had to restart it. I have to do that every other day. Is this nitpicking? Yes. I would still rather have this phone than any other phone, but here's the thing. If you're giving me a communications device that's supposed to be revolutionary, I need it to be a communications device all the time, not just when it doesn't get hung up on something. None of this is anything, I don't think, except like you were talking about with the power. None of this is anything that's not going to be fixed with a software upgrade or, you know, some sort of revision or some sort of tweak. I would like it if that would go ahead and happen to get, you know, the known issues fixed, because this has been an issue that I've had and talked about since, I don't think I talked about it on the show for the first couple of days because I didn't want to be a naysayer and I also wanted to find out if it was something that everybody else was having. But I've talked to people who have this now, and now it's been close to a month, and I would like for my email to work all the time like my email does everywhere else.
Yeah, and I think, Bill, you kind of hit it a little bit for a lot of us, because I, on my last show, came out and kind of talked about, is Apple spreading itself too thin a little bit? Do they have their fingers in too many places, and is it being hard for them to grow at the rapid growth in all these different markets that they're growing into? And I think they're not quite paying as much attention to details as they have in the past. And so for us diehard people, as Victor's pointing out, who've had the Holy Grail, we've had the perfect, what we perceived to be the perfect phone, you know, you can debate on that, but it was a pretty great device, as you're pointing out, with 1.0. And now these are minor little things, but to a lot of us, with this microscope view, it's pretty huge. It's a pretty big deal. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't come out and point these flaws out and say, you know what, this isn't the Apple that we know, and this isn't Apple at the top of its game. This is Apple struggling a little bit, and we all, just being fans, want to see them rise to that level that we know they can achieve and not let these little things out. A lot of us, I think, I personally would have liked them to see them wait a little while longer and just push the date back, but I think they were really under the gun in a lot of areas. But this is something else new that they're doing. They're pre-announcing products. They never pre-announced products before, so they never had the problem because we never knew what was coming out until they told us they had it. So it's a whole different game that we're being seen played, and I think there's a lot of factors that go into it. I think it's their rising market share. They're in new markets they haven't been in before. You have people that are Apple users now that don't have a Mac, they've never used OS X, but they consider themselves Apple users because they have an iPod or an iPhone or an Apple TV. Or, I mean, you can get a million products from Apple now that don't require you to use, you know, OS X on your desktop.
Well, I think that, you know, what Victor was pointing out is that, you know, everyone has, all the people who have iPhones right now are really, really happy with them, especially the new iPhone users. Because the iPhone, even with bugs, is still better than most phones. And we have seen with the first...
Better than all phones.
Better than all phones, yes. But we have seen, you know, with the first generation iPhone, with the 1.0 software, it was a masterpiece. And we know that Apple really cares for the iPhone and wants to make it better. And we've seen with, you know, OS X in the past, like with Leopard, I was talking with Bill about this. With Leopard, we had a lot of bugs when it was first put out. And that kind of goes the same way, you know, whenever Apple releases a new major version of their product. But they always fix it. They always have this, you know, micro level of awareness of all the problems and issues in their products. And so I definitely think that we can look forward to, you know, be it 2.1 or 2.2 or whatever. But I definitely think that Apple is certainly working on it. And I think that, you know, with all the things that they were adding with the OS as far as, you know, hooks for third-party applications and the enterprise stuff and all the new stuff that they're doing with it, I think that's, you know, what's keeping it so unstable right now, obviously. But I definitely think they're going to fix it.
Yeah, I mean, when Paul Thurrott from Windows Weekly comes out and says how great the App Store and the iPhone is and that, you know, Microsoft kind of missed the boat. I don't know if you guys saw that article this week, but I was like, something big is going on here. I mean, that's when you know.
Isn't sort of an expectation?
Really, well, I think that T-Mobile mentioned that they were looking at doing like an App Store model for all the phones on their network. So it's definitely making waves, and people are definitely noticing it.
Don't you think it's something of an expectations game, though? Because I'm on my eighth cell phone in 9 years. I've hated all of them except for this one. The reason I went through so many is I've been violent with a couple of them, and I like to think I'm not a violent person, but, you know, my Razr met its demise because I wanted it to. And I say this because I expected to at least sort of kind of hate the iPhone, just because I hate cell phones and I don't like people calling me. We have this thing called email, you know. You can call if you've, like, really got to talk to me, right? And I love the iPhone, and now I don't mind when people call. And I think my thing is that all of a sudden my expectations of cell phone went to here, up to here. And now with 2.0, just because it's buggy, now it's like here. If I'd never had the first iPhone, I would think 2.0 with crashing only once a day would be so great, you know? So, and I think we go through this. He said 3 million people love their iPhone. I bet most of the people who love the new iPhone didn't have the first one. Would you say that's...
Oh, I agree. That's, yeah. They don't care, like, if they had the first one or not.
There's like two classes of iPhone users. Those of us who are like old fogies who are just, you know, in the good old days.
As someone coming from the Treo, I got my Treo to the point where it crashed maybe 3 or 4 times a day. And then, no, because you could do that, right? There weren't... You didn't live inside Apple's box as an application developer on the Treo. You could do anything you wanted. And that's really cool, because there's a lot of cool things my Treo could do. If I wanted to get an app that ran in the background, even though the Treo didn't support that, I could find them, and it was awesome. But, you know, it came at a price or a potential price. So, I finally got my Treo to the point where it crashed once a week. But it took some geeky learning to get there. I didn't have to be a geek at all to get my iPhone to the point where it crashes once a week. It probably does that all by itself.
That's why it's so user-friendly, right?
It's so user-friendly.
It crashes
it's
automatically.
It's the same. It crosses all set for you, yeah.
Well, we spent some time talking about the new iPhone software. Do we all agree that it's a temporary thing, and when, you know, a month or 6 weeks from now, do you think it's just going to...
2-1 beta 3 build. I mean, if you've been watching the rumors and this, what's happening with the development, sounds like 2.1 is going really fast. And that should be a good indication, like Michael was pointing out, that Apple is hearing the cries and they're aware of it and they're going to do something about it. So I hold, you know, hope that that fixes a lot of the little and you know, these are annoyances, really. I mean, let's talk about what crashing on the iPhone is. It goes a little slow occasionally, or maybe resets an application. I don't get a lot of hard resets. I don't know if you guys are getting a lot of hard resets, but I get, you know, like Dave's pointing out, maybe one thing where it totally resets itself once a week.
Yeah.
But the majority of it is some weird thing. Like I was showing these guys my photo app every once in a while, giving me this little Modrian kind of stylistic mode. And I just figure it's Apple trying to help me add more art to my photography, but you know, it'll block things out, and that's happened a couple times. But it's a really weird minor thing. You know?
Well, it's quirky enough to where, you know, you go to launch an app and it won't launch, and then you try another app and it won't launch, and you have to know, okay, now it's time to reboot the phone. Is it life threatening? Is it even a deal killer? No, but it taints that experience. So
I just got to share this one because I was walking down the street. By the way, Lisa Loeb, September 16th, cover story of iProng Magazine. Go subscribe now. You'll get it next month. I was listening to Lisa's music, and, you know, her famous song, Steph, you say you only hear what I want to. My iPhone is using the
Can you sing more of that for us, actually, please?
No.
Okay.
Thank you. That'll cost extra. That'll be tonight. I'm the surprise performer at Coverville. My iPhone locked up, and it was you say, over and over and over again. And
it has looping, man.
That
it
was
has
when
looping.
The iPhone
it's a feature.
Was just about to go out in the street. I'm like, what's a hard reboot? So, I mean, I don't know. It's just like it's a comical device now. It's kind of funny. But I mean, I guess we all agree that, you know, this is a temporary thing. So let's move past all me and my whining and you guys trying to console me. And let's set aside the temporary glitches. Let's talk about the overall platform. We've got this app store now. We've got all these applications. There's a ton of them. There's a ton of downloads. I mean, is this about what we expected? Is it more? Is it surprising that this is such a big phenomenon?
Wait, I want a competition. I want to call a competition. How many screens full of apps does each person here on this panel have? I'm just curious. I think I have three and one of web apps, so I won't count that. But I have three full screens of apps. It becomes a disease. Downloading applications becomes a disease.
I'm actually afraid to install anymore. Because I'm afraid I'm going to like it, and then I won't have the guts to downgrade.
Wait, how many
I have
do you have?
Three pages of third-party applications, a page of web apps, and then, you know, a couple
winner gets
extra
one of
apps
these, by the way.
On the Apple page.
Yeah, I got five pages of apps.
I have 52 emails since
Dave.
I sat down here.
I think I have a problem.
2.5 pages for me.
Oh, Victor, you're lagging.
Really? So I have
got
more
two.
Than
I'm
you?
Purpose.
That's
Jason
shocking
Tucker,
to me.
Bring your iPhone up here.
But I mean that just illustrates the point that the App Store is huge.
Yeah,
it's
a huge
deal.
The App Store. Oh, there it is. Thank you. Good. Okay, yeah, we've got a meeting later with jackets and stuff.
It's nine
good.
Pages and he can't stop doing it because he's streaming video live off. What did you do to your iPhone? It's like connected to your thigh or I don't
Where are you streaming? Quick. Oh, awesome.
Awesome. So, the App Store is huge. Again, it's one of these things. It's Apple. So it's exactly what we've always seen from Apple, except for, you know, that the dark time when Jobs wasn't there. But it is. It's this, you know, as long as you're happy inside Apple's very, very well-defined box, it's awesome. It is. And you know, the 3 million happy iPhone users aren't geeks like me.
Right.
So they probably don't even, you know, most people probably don't even get anywhere near the edges of the box, and Apple knows this, right? They know that to preserve the user experience, then you build the box. And the App Store is awesome for probably 98% of all iPhone users. And the other 2%, it's awesome for us 98% of the time.
Right. Now, do you think that Apple's going to be expanding their scope of what the SDK can do? Because, you know, for me, I know I talk a lot about Quick, because I think Quick is a really cool technology, and they, you know, they just announced their new version for the iPhone 2.0 software that works on the iPhone 3G. But we're never going to see Quick on the App Store with the current version of the SDK because there's no direct access to the camera. Do you think that they're going to be expanding the scope of the SDK?
I think the jailbreaking community, to call it something, is the reason that the App Store is what it is now. I think it would have happened anyway. It may not have happened this quickly. It certainly wouldn't have happened with this, the breadth of apps that we have now. I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there, and there's some things out there that Apple probably would have said, yeah, you know, not so much. But having people out there frustrated enough with their phone to say, look, I know it can do more. I want it to do more, and I'm willing to risk totally ruining my phone to do this. That pushed the App Store to where it is today. And I think, you know, and so that was the, if you want to use Apple terminology, that was the killer app to force Apple's hand into the App Store. Something like this, that's the killer app to force it to the next level.
Right.
We all know the iPhone's capable of it. I mean, the proof and concept right
there
here. There are people watching this right now that aren't in this room because of the iPhone. Okay, there's your killer app. Apple needs to address that. And they'll find an Apple way, and it'll still be inside the box. There'll just be this extra little room. And they'll make it work in a way that placates 98% of them.
But
I won't say us, because
app,
we won't be happy.
I thought the killer app was I Am Rich.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Who has I Am Rich on their phone?
Yeah.
$1,000 app that literally does nothing so you can show off that you're willing to burn a grand. Apple pulled it. Are they right for doing that kind of thing? Is it smart, or are they just being finicky?
I'm sorry, really?
Yeah, this is,
planet
have
you
been
traveling?
On? What planet have I been on? I've been across this planet
he's been traveling.
People bought
he missed
the app.
It.
$8,000 came in. Apple kept a third. Some kid got $5,000 for coming up with a good joke, and then they yanked it from the store. They never had an explanation. Is Apple just protecting their turf and getting rid of the idiocy, or are they being like evil overlord? I'm not really sure. I'm asking
guys. Forgive me, I have a question, and I'm going to take it a little bit outside of what we're talking about. Are there any negative implications? And I'm not saying there are, but are there any negative implications for the App Store and whatever the next big device is going to be from Apple as we move towards the tablet, as we move away from any kind of like a CD-ROM or anything in the computers that they're coming out with? Are we moving to more of a walled garden into our bigger computing experience?
And
is that okay?
I talked about that exactly on my last podcast. It's pretty funny. I took a lot of flack for it, actually, from a lot of the community, because I did question, is it right for Apple to have this much control? Because, yes, you know, that app was stupid. It cost $1,000. I thought it was stupid. You know, I was frankly surprised that it got through the screening process in the first place. But for it to get out there, and Apple's been doing this with a lot of apps now, these apps are getting out there so you can break out of that walled garden or that box if you're really quick. And, you know, Steve Jobs came out this week and said they do have a kill switch to maybe pull some of these back if they want to. Now, they haven't actually deleted apps from phones yet that I'm aware of, but Apple having that much control over the software, I understand the hardware, but I kind of made it analogous to, could you imagine the outcry if Apple said, you know what, you got to buy all of our applications from this store for your Mac that we built, and you know what, we're going to screen all the apps, and if you want an app that does this, we're going to tell you no, you can't. So it's different with the iPhone because we've got the iPod, and there's some different rules playing with the mobile markets, but it does concern me. You know, I don't know if it's right or wrong. I'm glad the App Store exists. I think it's great for Apple. I think it's great for us as customers. I'm glad it's there. But I am starting to question, is this the ideal way? Is this the way we all are going to end up buying stuff in the future?
All right, so we spent a long time complaining about how the phone's unstable and how, you know, we want it to be more stable. And, you know, heaven forbid, it's a phone. We need it to work as a phone. Now we're complaining that we don't have all the freedom that we have, say, on the Trio that crashes all the time. So we want a cake and eat it too scenario. That's my concern, is we're saying we want all these apps that do all these things. I believe there are many reasons that Apple has created their walled garden. The primary reason is to keep the device as stable as possible.
But then I would argue something's very broken in the screening process.
Exactly.
Because these apps are getting
absolutely
out there. Things like the NetShare app, which violates Apple says the contract with AT&T. So how did that? I mean, that's a huge thing. That's not just some minor little thing like a weird app that costs too much money that doesn't do anything. This is this violates some. You know,
but
so
see, I don't think that's. I don't think it violates their Prime directive. It does not cause stability issues. Right, it causes some contractual, there's legal concerns, potentially, almost maybe certainly, who knows. If the prime concern is keep it stable, and that's why we've built this walled garden, and hey, we've got this walled garden, so we can actually, you know, tighten the walls a little bit because we've got everybody to buy it. Okay, that's fine. But you know, we can't sit and complain about we want it stable. You know, this is the thing we liked about our Macs, right? This is the thing. I supported Windows machines for years. What did I have at home? A Mac. Why? Because I didn't want to have to support it. I wanted it to simply work. And the Mac is not a walled garden to a point, but it kind of is.
I'm not talking about the Mac, though. I'm talking about whatever's next.
Whatever's next. Yeah. Okay.
And I'm not talking about the iPhone either. I'm fine with the iPhone the way it is. I mean, I would like the bugs to be fixed, but the App Store, I totally get. That's fine. What I'm wondering about is and it didn't go well, but with their push towards cloud computing and with the constant rumors that there's going to be like another sub-notebook or the tablet or whatever it's going to be, with Snow Leopard, when it comes out, running so much thinner, running so much faster, needing less power, it feels to me like what we're actually watching right now is a move to, if not a different platform, a different way of thinking about computing. The question at that point is, are they going to have that same stability thing, or is it going to be like a Mac, just cheaper? Is it going to be like a Mac, just faster, or is it going to be something that comes in cereal boxes that actually does computing? It's super cheap, we'll take care of everything, everybody's got Apple now, oh, and here's where you get this, here's where you get this, and no, you can't go to CompUSA because they don't exist, but you can't go to Best Buy and get what you need at this point.
Yeah, I'm not
afraid of it. I'm just curious. I think it's fascinating, and I'm wondering if that's the way it's going.
In that same direction, what's also fascinating is there's been for many years this big push toward the cloud, right? Google's certainly, you know, banging that drum. And yet here are a lot of people clamoring for a device that is exactly the opposite of that, right? The iPhone is not the cloud. It's, you know, your apps are on the phone. Yes, they interact with things on the cloud. And arguably most of the, and we don't have this data, but it'd be interesting to see how many of the apps that are being bought are simply self-contained apps on the phone, or are they things that interact with the rest of the world? But it is interesting seeing that, you know, this whole push that we've had towards the apps in the cloud. Now, no, I want the app here. And I'm happy with my walled garden.
Well, but I don't want stuff in the cloud. Not yet. I do eventually, but I live in the second largest city in the continent, and my cell phone doesn't work inside my apartment. Until we can make that work, I don't want stuff in the cloud. I mean, if my email comes in, that's fine, but to be able to not use my apps because I'm inside my apartment or on the subway, that doesn't work for me until we got these signals fast and pervasive and everywhere, and it works in the bathroom, in the basement, and on Jupiter, then yeah, bring it on. But I'm just not sure we're there yet, and maybe that's why the Mobile Me thing has been kind of a train wreck so far.
That we're stifling innovation from the development community out there. There's, you and I both know, at least I know, there are applications sitting there in queue waiting to be approved by, you know, the almighty gods and put upon us, and they're not being approved, but while at the same time we've got the I Am Rich application going through. Apple told us very early on, this is about security on this phone. We want to protect the security, we want to protect the stability. But I think that I don't know. I guess that's my Cuban roots. I don't like the government telling me where I need to go to get my applications and which one of the application developers I can buy from. I have a problem with that. And if that starts bleeding into the next generation devices, where I'm seeing more of that trend, I'm really going to have a problem with that freedom of ability to choose.
But what if it's sexy?
Then all bets are off, baby. Okay. That's all I can say.
You know, kind of coming back to that, I want to just comment on that thing real quick because I wanted to say this earlier. I think part of the problem right now, and I think this is another one of those areas, you know, this isn't gloom and doom. I think they're going to get it sorted out. But I think part of the frustration from developers is that Apple said, okay, we have these set of rules, but they haven't publicly, like, it doesn't seem like they've well-defined them, because some things are getting out that suddenly they say, oh, whoops, that shouldn't have gone out. And by the same token, some apps are getting held up for reasons that the developer doesn't know why they're being held up, and they're finding weeks and weeks later. Wouldn't it be much better for the developer if they knew, you know what, you can't do this, you can do, you know, it seems like they need it, and maybe it's just because they tried to rush getting apps out there. I mean, developers only had like 4 months from the announcement through the SDK. And so I think all these things are going to get worked out. I think it was just a timing thing, more or less. But Apple does need to start to be more forthcoming, I think, with what are the rules for this walled garden? What can I do? What can I do? And is that all that? And maybe it is. Maybe it's just my not knowing that it's in the SDK. But I would think developers, you know, who seem to be complaining about that line not being well defined, would know more than I would, because I haven't delved deep into Apple's documentation or anything. But obviously, if apps are getting through, you know, even maybe some people at Apple aren't really clear on where those lines are.
Well, what I want to know is what Apple's checking process is for these applications when they get them in. What do they do to determine whether or not they're okay to be run on the phone? Do they just open it and see if it crashes the phone, and if that's it, then okay, approve it? Because I've seen a lot of applications, specifically with an application called Mobile Chat. It phones home to the Mobile Chat servers, because that's part of the experience in Mobile Chat. And so they said, we will know the moment Apple opens this application. And so I got an email the day that Apple actually started looking at it and approved it, and you know, it was the same day. So who knows if they just looked at it, ran it, okay, it runs, it's cool, there you go, because it hopped right on the store right after that. And developers don't have to send in their source code, so they're not picking through source code either.
Really? Oh, I didn't know that.
It's only applications that start with the letter W are not allowed in. It was right in the rules. I read it.
I just want to stop real quick. We're about halfway through the panel, and near the end of the panel, we're going to be giving away a $100 set of earbuds that work with iPhone, iPod, or any other device from Vmoto. You get a free raffle ticket either at this table or down at the OC table. It's stapled to the schedule so you won't lose them. Or Griffin's walking around with them, Vanna White here. Put the ticket in the bin, and near the end, we're going to pull it out, and somebody's going home with a nice set of headphones. Not you. Don't even think about it.
Wait, I thought that was the whole re... Forget it. I'm out of here.
I'm out of here.
We're going to need a new Dave up here.
So, we got halfway through this panel, and I hate to jump to it so early because it's like, wow, it is kind of the lost child or whatever. But this is the iPhone and iPod panel, and we've been going half an hour now, and the word I've not heard spoken once yet is iPod. It's really kind of crazy because there's 100-something million of them out there, and up until a year ago, it was the it device. I haven't touched an iPod in months. I don't know about you guys. Are they even still making the iPod?
I used mine on the plane.
Me too.
How relevant is the iPod anymore? I think there's probably still more iPods being sold if you combine them than the iPhone, possibly. Seems like the only time we hear about the iPod is the touch, which is really part of the iPhone family, more so than the iPod family. How important is the iPod still? Does it still matter? Should we be throwing them out in the garbage already?
Well, I think when you want to talk about the iPod, you have to look at what Apple's doing right now with the iPod Touch, because it's a convergence device where it's the best of both worlds. It doesn't have, you know, you're not tied down to a contract with the iPod Touch like you are with the iPhone, but you still have all the benefits of it, and yet it's still simple enough that it's still just a music player. And so I guess you have to decide whether or not Apple is going to move in the direction of, well, let's just put all of this stuff together, because at some point we will see the capacities that we see in the iPod that we do in the iPhone. So you got to wonder if Apple is just going to start going, you know, let's put everything together, have one thing in your pocket. And I guess that really depends on, you know, what consumers want. If they want just one device that, yeah, they're going to have to be tied to it because it's a phone. Is that going to be valuable enough to consumers to want to do that kind of thing?
How long do you think it'll be before the capacities are there? And I ask this, and I'll ask this in a snarky way. My iPod has 10 times the capacity that my iPhone, and I have the biggest iPhone you can buy, 10 times the capacity. I can't even come close. Now, granted, I'm like an old guy, so to me, you know, owning my music and having all my albums with me on the road, that's important. Is it really important? Well, that doesn't matter. It feels like it's important, right?
Yeah.
So that's why I have a 160 gig iPod. But it does make a difference. If I want to have movies and stuff, the reason I used my iPod on the plane was because the movie that I wanted to watch, I thought I had loaded it onto my iPhone, and then I remembered, oh yeah, I didn't have enough room, so it wasn't there. But, oh, thank goodness, I have my entire collection on this little device. yes, the screen's smaller, but, you know, I'm sitting in like a little 4x2 cube here, so small isn't really a concern when it comes to screen size. You know, we've already, that ship has sailed, so I'm okay. At least I've got something to watch for a couple of hours while this plane, you know, bumps me through the air. So, you know, yes, it, in that sense, it was important to me to have everything on that one device, because if I didn't, I was, you know, SOL.
Well, it's definitely important to me, too. I really, really love the, you know, the idea of just having everything with me. I had a third-generation iPod for a long time. It was 20 gigs. And at some point, I just, you know, ran out of space because my library kept growing and growing. And I really, really liked the third-generation iPod because it's very different from all the rest of them. It didn't have any physical buttons. But, you know, at some point, I did have to move to a fifth-generation iPod because I really, really wanted to have everything with me. So to go back to your question about, you know, when are we going to see capacities like that, it's going to be a long time until we see, you know, flash capacities getting that high. That and, you know, flash right now isn't as reliable as hard disk storage because, you know, there are only so many uses you can get out of the flash memory. So it's not that big, it's not as big a deal.
Yeah, I would actually argue that point because I think in the iPod, you're beating the heck out of that hard drive, bouncing it around in your bag all the time.
Yeah.
So I think it's more just a capacity thing.
But I think that, you know, it for me, even though I love having everything with me in my pocket, I hardly ever bring that fifth generation iPod with me. It's so convenient to have most of the stuff that I'm probably going to listen to with me in a device that I already have because it's my phone. That and, you know, if someone calls me and says, hey, I need you to come out to my house and pick up that camera lens that you wanted to get because I can't make it down to your town, so come out here. Oh, I don't know where they live, but I have a device with GPS in it and maps. That's not a problem for me at all. Yeah. So the convenience of having, you know, just all of that important stuff with you, especially, you know, of course, your music, is great. But I don't know if that works for everybody who wants to have all their music all the time.
Yeah, I keep my iPod in the car. It only leaves the car to sync and to when I travel. But otherwise, it's the dock connector in the glove box, and I don't even think about it. So
I don't think it goes away, getting back to your original question. But I think it becomes, I hope, honestly, that it becomes a little bit less important. I would like for it to be, it can still be the thing that gets people in the door. And I mean that both literally and figuratively. If it gets people to walk into an Apple store, that's cool. Or if it gets people to experience the whole Apple ecosystem for the first time, that's cool too. I would really like for, I mean, it seems to me they've almost reached saturation, and yet every time there's a quarterly report, what everybody looks at is, oh, is iPod growth still, is it up? Is it down? Is it slowing? What's iPod growth doing? And it feels to me like we are, and I could be wrong, I often am, it feels like we are moving more towards that mythical device thing that's going to do a whole lot more. I think the standalone music player is getting to be less important. Now, there will always be guys like you who want to carry all of your stuff around. I've got, I think, an 80 gig, which no longer holds all of my media, sadly, but I've got it, and I still use it from time to time. But I think most people are going to be okay with the smaller storage and just having, you know, going back and syncing, because I think we've all learned to do that with our phone, with our Nano, with our Mini. I mean, we've all kind of gotten used to that. A year ago, before the iPhone came out, I had to have the biggest iPod because I wanted everything that I had. And then when I got the iPhone, I'm like, I got the iPhone, so I don't have to carry my iPod anymore, and now I'm choosing my media, you know, swapping it all the time.
I think what you're likely to see is that you know, the line just slims down. You're going to have one choice of a shuffle, you're going to have one choice of a touch, and you're going to have one choice of a hard drive iPod. The prices are going to come down to where they're just really cheap, and if you want the latest, greatest whiz-bang thing, then you're going to have, you know, the touch line continuing to be. That's the new generation. That's where it's going to be going. The convergence, the apps, the, you know, if you just want a music player, pick your storage level and your size level, and we've got these three options for you. And I know so many people that in a music device, they have a shuffle that they use to go to the gym. They have a Nano that they use for something else, and they have a full-blown iPod that has all of their music. on it that's for like the car. That time they, you know, they have it hooked up to the stereo and it just stays in the living room and it's got
Know
everything in there. Yeah, and I still carry my both mine around too for the exact reasons that everybody's pointed out. I think there's going to be room for both, and plus you have the whole, there's the interface issue. There's just a whole class of people that can't use a touch screen based device for whatever reason. They need something with buttons. So I think there's always going to be a place in the lineup, but I think as everybody's pointing out, it's going to be a little less relevant, and I think it's just going to be one of those things, as Ken's kind of pointing out, that's there. You can get it if you need it, but really, this is what we're pushing, this is what we're marketing, and this is the next great thing.
Well, there's been this really big push for convergence, not just with Apple, but with all these companies, and it's a really great idea when you think about it, and on paper, to have one device in your pocket. But my question is, what has kept consumers from adopting these convergence devices? Is it the interface? Is it that it's too difficult to use? Or is it just that the options haven't been as broad as we want it? You know, we're talking about great storage in an iPhone. If we had a 160-gigabyte iPhone, would everybody drop their iPods? And everyone who has an iPod, would they just go out and get an iPhone? So is it the interface, or is it more options, or is it a combination of them? What do you guys think?
Familiarity. I mean, you know, people have owned these iPod things now for years, and they're reliable and they're easy to use. I know my wife, you know, she has an iPhone. She can put music in it. She doesn't. She goes to her iPod, you know. Now, is she an outlier? Maybe, maybe not. But I'm just saying, a lot of people just want to use what they use. They want it simple. They don't want to spend hours on this stuff. One more time, I know I'm sounding like the protagonist here. Not everyone spends every minute of their life babysitting their devices.
But shouldn't they?
No, they shouldn't.
We've got a support group for that too, Ken. Actually, it's called New Media Expo.
I really think it's going to, more and more, the future of not just Apple's products, but of tech is going to come down to use. Because technology prices keep driving lower and lower. A good example is I just bought one of these little flip video cameras. I carry that thing with me now everywhere to shoot quick video. But I also have, you know, another camera, a camcorder, and I know people that even have a third. They have a really high-end, big HD camera, and they use it for different uses. So they have multiple devices. I have multiple Macs. I have an iBook that I take on the road. I have, you know, and I know people now that are getting a MacBook Air. They already have another laptop, but they're like, you know what, I'm going to use the Air when I'm going away for the weekend. So, and prices are allowing that. The technology is allowing that. So I think you're going to see a lot more people using different ranges of products for different uses, and they're just going to have multiples. And so I think it's really going to come more down to how are you using the device than that, you know, its form and function together.
Well, let's talk about these other iPods. I mean, we've got this little shuffle. If it got any smaller, we think we'd lose it, right? If it got any smaller, it would be a Saturday Night Live sketch. It would be in the iPod Invisa. We got the Classic, which seems at this point to just keep getting bigger capacity and kind of do the same thing. And we got the Nano, which I don't know what happened. It went to a trash compactor. They changed that to a whole thing. Now, all these products have been out for about a year or more now. Does anybody dare make any predictions? Because it's coming up on September, and it seems like that's always when we get new iPods. Now, last several years we've done this panel, the expo is in September. We were holding the new iPod, saying this is what we think. Here's a chance to be wrong, because it's August.
I'll jump out. I don't think it's going to be anything with the iPods for all the reasons that we've been talking about. I think the traditional iPod line, the Shuffle, you'll see storage sizes increase. This would go for the Shuffle, the Nano, and the iPod Classic. I think the only thing we're going to see innovating there is storage capacity is increasing and prices may be going down. But I don't see a lot of room. That's not where Apple's going to innovate. They're going to innovate with maybe a touch. So I think it's more likely to be some sort of generation of device like a I don't know what it's going to be. Everybody says a tablet, but more of a larger size iPhone, iPod touch style device that's more about mobile computing that has these third-party apps on it. It's just a simple device, just a larger internet communicator, email client / web browser / everything that the iPhone is, but just in a slightly larger form factor. And I think it's going to sit somewhere between your notebook and your iPhone.
So you think that we're going to see another product coming out from Apple soon, just a different product line entirely? What I'm wondering about is what are they going to do with the iPod Touch? Because right now the iPod Touch is more expensive than an iPhone. What kind of innovations are we going to see in the iPod Touch that makes it worth it to get the iPod Touch and not the iPhone? Are we going to see lower prices? Is that the only thing that we're going to see? Or are we going to see more features that make sense in an iPod Touch that maybe don't make as much sense in the iPhone? Or are we just going to see more iPhone features come to the iPod Touch?
I think initially it's going to be probably about price with the iPod Touch. I don't know, but it gets in a weird – Apple's in a weird situation with those devices because all the way around on the product line, I mean, you have the MacBook Air sitting there too, which is an ultra-mobile device with a screen and can do the internet and all that stuff. Does a little bit more than that, and you're right. You have the iPod Touch sitting on the other end, and you put this middle-tier device, say, $700, $800 $1,000 range, this that sub-$1,000 magic price point everybody's talking about. Yeah, where are the differences? And Apple's going to have a bit of a challenge there, and I'm not sure what they're going to do in that arena.
Suddenly the product line reminds us of the Scully years, right? Yeah. Suddenly the product line reminds us of the Scully years. It was more funny the first time. Yeah.
No, it was good.
Oh, it was?
I like the explanation.
Solid, right?
I thought that was excellent.
Just so.
So,
I don't know. Does anybody... I got to cut you off because there's root beer here. I don't know how this happened, but apparently we have beverages, and everyone not holding a Starbucks cup gets one, I guess.
Yeah.
I really don't know. Who are you again?
Well, I'm with the Jacksonville Soda Company.
You bring free stuff, you get airtime, really.
My name's Christine. I'm with the Jackson Hole Soda Company, and we're here today with podcast.
Not that much airtime.
We're here with Podcast Tune-Up, and they're doing a program called... Soda Pop Fizz, and they're doing a live broadcast of it today and featuring our soda company, and we're looking for audience participation. It's upstairs in room 238. It starts at 12:45. So please come and participate.
Guerrilla marketing at its finest.
Yesterday someone came through with a remote control car and kept ramming our stage, and I thought that Smart. Was great too, but root beer is much better. Oh, look at this. Bucking root beer. I thought it said something else. It's like, going for the explicit tag, like, I just saw it like this, you know.
I wasn't allowed to bring you.
Thank you.
Sorry, Ken, man. It's all yours. You were about to say something before I turned into an idiot.
Do what?
You were about to say something before I cut us all off for
a soda
break.
Yeah, I'm talking to Adam about it now.
Doesn't matter.
That's it.
You were actually going to ask for
the
a
question,
soda, right?
The question that I asked.
He's going to say it on my panel tomorrow.
You're having a panel
tomorrow?
Hey,
Bill. Yeah,
you're invited.
We're getting stuff. Shouldn't they get something?
My show, actually.
Excellent.
Is it time to do the...
It's almost time.
Okay, all right. It's almost time.
It's almost time. Yeah, one final reminder, by the way. If you want to win...
No, thanks, really. I don't want
the root beer, you can't win. That's all mine. But if you want to win this $100 set of Vimota Vibe Duo earbuds for iPhone, iPod, and other devices that works with a banana and a pumpkin as well, all you got to do is get a free raffle ticket from over here or over here, throw it in a silver bin, and we're going to give that away in about 5 minutes. Dave, you can't win. I'm sorry.
No, look, I got moles out there. It's totally fine.
I know.
Okay.
They got like half the people out here with backbeat. It's like, I don't know. You got children running around handing out flyers, slave labor. We got to have a beer or something. I got to learn how this works.
Me too. Maybe you can teach me.
Let's end on a general question. Y'all can take this any way you want. There's a lot going on at Apple right now. The Mac seems to have the highest market share in a generation. The iPhone is going crazy. The iPod is a stalwart. It dominates. iTunes is the number one music seller. MobileMe is new territory. All these different things going on. All these companies that Apple's working with, record labels, cell phone companies. What's next for Apple? I mean, where do they go from here? There's a million different oars in the water that may end up being one big oar. They may just go off in different ways. What really happens now?
They focus on all the products that are struggling and fix them and make them better. Someone pointed out to me that Snow Leopard. They've talked about a lot about Snow Leopard, and they're not adding any new features. They're going in there and they're tweaking performance and they're making it better. And I think that's where they need to focus right now. They need to focus on that on the iPhone. I think they need to focus that on maybe not so much on the iPod Touch, but I mean iPod Touch suffers the same issues, I think, as it's the same, code base is my understanding pretty much. So, I think it's time for Apple to, they really don't need a lot of new products coming out right now. It's time for them to hunker down and focus on taking their product line, which is working really well right now, and improving it and just making it better. Just, making those minor improvements, getting speed improvements, getting stability improvements, really core focusing on that, and we can wait till Macworld for, you know, some new product. We know something's coming in September. I think that should be about it for a while. I don't think Apple needs to diversify into another business. They're in the media business. They're in the music business. They're in you know, cell phones now. They're in consumer electronics. They're in, you know, I talked about this, I think, a year ago or a couple years ago, maybe even on this panel, this concern about them becoming like a Sony. I mean, Sony was huge in consumer electronics, and then they branched out into movies and things, and they've kind of lost their way. And I just am concerned that Apple doesn't fall into that mode. I think they've got a full line, and I think they need to just focus on those core businesses now and improve all of them and just bring them all up to Apple's standard, because I don't think they're there in all those areas yet. I think the computers are still going great. I mean, Apple's still Apple on the computer OS X front, but I'd like to see that same kind of quality coming to the iPhone. You know, it's time to start doing that.
Well, you know, with all this innovation and just moving into different product lines, maybe instead of grooming a CEO for Apple, they're grooming Apple to have Ron Popeil be the CEO.
I think Snow Leopard is sort of paving the way for a kind of ubiquity for Apple products that would be very surprising 10 years ago. It feels like they are, I don't know if they're going into a million different products as much as they are going into a few products to do a million different things. And this, again, goes back to the iPod Touch, the iPhone, the tablet, the MacBook Air, if they can bring the price down significantly. I think very similar to what Adam was saying. I think it's about getting everything to run super light, so that they can put more power into cheaper devices, smaller devices, things that are not going to cost people $1,000 to walk out of the store with, or $1,700. I'm looking for something really exciting that's going to be affordable. And I don't mean affordable for Apple. I mean affordable, because I think people are now, between the first iPhone, the second iPhone, the increased Mac market share, I think people are now finally turned on to how sexy and how reliable Apple products are, and all they want is to not feel like a jerk for spending $500, $600, $700 more. My dad and I were talking for a year about what computer he was going to buy. And I told him about different things about the Mac, and he loved the idea of it, and he kept talking about it. Called me last week. You're going to be mad at me. I just bought a Dell. Why did he buy the Dell? $700.
Because he doesn't have to pay. Oh, can you support the Dell for him, or did you tell him he's are you going to support the Dell for him, or is he on his own?
Well, the cool thing, I mean, honestly, I told him when he first started talking to me about it, I was like, I'd love it if you got a Mac. I think you would enjoy it, but he's not a big computer guy. What he's going to do is check his email and do something for the company that he works for online. So I was like, you know, if you don't think you're going to play with it, if you don't think you're actually going to get into it and have fun, buy the cheapest laptop you can find. But if you actually want to enjoy your computing experience. And we talked about it for quite a while, and then, yeah, I don't know. I guess it was when I was driving across the country. I wasn't there, you know. Stop, don't.
Well, here's, you know, going back to what, Adam, you were saying, as far as Apple fixing, you know, and giving attention to all their products that they've kind of neglected, I remember, you know, when Steve Jobs first came back, and he just cleared everything out, and I'm a late Apple convert. So I wasn't around in the OS 9 days, but I remember the product matrix that they had, the only four products that Apple had, and I really liked that. And they gave a lot of attention to those four products, and they did really, really well with that. And what I would like to see with Apple, and what I really hope they do, is what you were saying, is they give a lot of attention to the products that they have out right now. And just get those products really, really strong, and get, you know, if they need more employees to work on that stuff as far as, you know, the App Store and everything else that they have going on, then I hope that they do that. I hope that they build up their company and build up the products, you know, before they start introducing more products and go off into different markets.
Right. You know, Bill, I think the word here is, you know, very often in the past when we talked about Apple, the word was innovation. I really think the word for the next couple years with Apple is going to be integration. And I think if you look at, see, way back when Steve Jobs talked about, you know, music in your pocket, and then we have, you know, all these areas of your life that Apple are in, they now have all the products in all the places that they want to have them in. And I think now it's all about integration. It's about, that's why they're in the cloud computing. That's why they have an iPod and an iPhone that's always on connection back to your Mac. That's why they have things like Back to My Mac. That's why they have Apple TV in your living room. So you can now have an Apple product with you pretty much 24/7 anywhere, and it's all going to eventually be connected to the same thing. And I think that's what we're going to see Apple doing. They're going to pull the OS. And notice they were very smart about making sure the OS is on every one of those devices, and it's the same OS. So that's going to make their integration thing much easier. They're kind of struggling with it right now, and I think we're seeing the very tip of the iceberg of it. But I think that's where we're going to see the innovation, is in integration. And I think they're going to be much more focused on that as opposed to putting out some new whiz-bang piece of hardware every year. I think we're going to see processors, you know, typical technology stuff happen now. Processors are going to get faster, memory is going to get bigger, storage is going to get bigger, prices are going to come down. All that stuff is going to naturally happen because it's tech. But I think where they're going to be focusing in is, now let's pull all these things together and see how we can make them all seamlessly work in your life.
Yeah, I just hope that limitations of bandwidth and availability of things like ubiquity and bandwidth and being able to access all of these wonderful things that Apple's making for us, that doesn't become the funnel point where we can't. Because no matter how good it is, if I go to that phone and my screen is blank because my contacts are gone, I got a problem.
Well, it's not going to happen quickly. I mean, we're talking about 5 years. We're talking about a five-year plan, but you're asking what's Apple going to be doing into the future? You know, I think it's going to be a little less about the hardware and more about that thing, because, you know, and I think they're ahead of the game already with everybody else. Who else is doing it? Who else has all the hardware pieces in place? Can you point to one company?
Not even close.
Well, the iPhone can't even point to one platform that has all the hardware pieces in place with different companies. It doesn't really exist.
The iPhone really represents that idea. I mean, because they put out that hardware, and now all they really need to do to make any of the improvements that they want to the device is push out more software, because the hardware is independent, you know, from the software and adding more features and all of that. So I definitely think that, you know, that's a direction that Apple is headed in. You know, as far as Steve used to talk about the whole digital hub thing, and you know, they're extending that even further with, you know, it used to be that you had to connect the device to your computer and sync all the time. That worked for a while, but, you know, people don't want to sync as much, you know, as they had to, you know, with iPhone 1.0, where you had to put it in there and wait for it to sync, you know, to get all the new changes for your calendars and all that. With, you know, they're integrating it with the internet, and it's a really great move to do that. And I think they're learning a lot from their partners like Google, because that's what they're all about. Google, I think, supports the idea of having, you know, a lot of the software local on the computer, but also using the internet as a tool to kind of bring everything together.
All right, well, God, I hate to bring this to an end. It seems like this panel always goes wire to wire every year. Next year we'll book an hour and a half, I think. But we're going to give this away in about 30 seconds, so if you don't have a raffle ticket, run, don't walk, over to grab one and get in here. They are free. I want to give you guys a chance to let people know where they can hear and read more about what you guys... That's a really awkward sentence. What are your shows and websites? We'll try it that way.
My name is Ken Ray. I do a daily Mac News podcast called macOS Ken. You can find it online at macosken.com or on iTunes. And, of course, you rock.
I'm Adam Christensen from the MacCast. You can find...
I'm sorry. Are there Day 6 people here? You're awesome. You are awesome, and thank you very much.
You triple rock. I'm Adam Christensen. I'm from the MacCast. You can find me at maccast.com or also on iTunes. Twitter name MacCast if you want to follow me there. I also occasionally make an appearance on the Mac Roundtable podcast, which a number of the people on this panel also do from time to time, and the iPhone Alley podcast on occasion as well. So check those out.
Once again, I'm Michael Johnston from iPhone Alley. That's iPhoneAlley.com, and we cover, you know, everything about the iPhone, news, tips, and reviews. And we're getting into new areas with that all the time, so check that out. We also have the podcast, iPhoneAlley.com/podcast. You can find us there or on iTunes. And when we were talking about doing this panel, we were thinking about, when are we going to, you know, do the iPhone Alley podcast? And, you know, all these guys that I have here, except for Victor, I've had on the podcast already. So it's kind of you know, just the same thing. So if you know, that's what you're going to get with the iPhone Alley podcast. And next,
except Victor.
Well, we're going to have you on at some point.
Minus it's all Victor. Of us, minus
you,
Victor
you
and Michael's
yet.
In charge.
You just hadn't met yet.
So you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/MichaelJohnston. And next week, we're going to be a little late with our show. We're going to have, because we're going to have Merlin Mann on the show next week. So definitely check that out.
I'm Dave Hamilton. The podcast that I do with John Braun every week is the Mac Geek Gab podcast. At macobserver.com/podcast or simply macgeekgab.com or iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/DaveHamilton and the Mac Observer and backbeatmedia.com. Go.
Victor Cahill, I do the Typical Mac User podcast at typicalmacuser.com. Put out shows every week. If you haven't listened to the archives lately, go back and listen. That stuff is there for a reason. I didn't just do it for having to listen once. Go back and listen to that stuff. Tell people about it. That's the old shows are there. New shows, you never know when they're going to come or when they're not going to come. So go listen now while you can.
Last and certainly least, I'm Bill Palmer, publisher of iProng Magazine, the publication for iPod, iPhone, music, podcasting, new media lovers. We're going to make that name longer, don't worry. We've got our table right here. You can come by and check out. You can check out. We've got the magazine here on the computer. You can read it for free. We got little cable wrappers, and Griffin's got T-shirts. I don't know who he's giving them to, but he's in charge now. I'm going home. And check out our partners, Orange County Podcasters over here, our partner group. Victor and Adam are both members of the group, and Greg's over there, and a bunch of people are over there I can't really see. Megan, I want you to come up and pull the number because you're the next panelist up.
And before that happens, I wanted to say thanks to Bill because
he's done this
for years and years, and he's helped sponsor this booth and make it happen at each one of these portable media expos or new media expos or podcast expos, whatever they happen to be called at the time. And so, Bill, thanks a lot for
you rock,
giving
oh,
us a place
you.
To talk.
You know, I wish I could ask you guys what the show will be called next year because you'd all be wrong. Old Media Convention.
And once again, thanks so much to Bill Palmer of iProng Magazine at iProng.com for not only letting me come on the panel to talk about the iPod and the iPhone, but also for letting me use this recording as one of our episodes. So thank you, Bill.
So what are we
going
to do? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Yuck. No.
Made up.